So I see that you made your Zencaster name Captain Macho.
I just, and it wouldn't accept Rob tonight, so I had to make something up.
Wow, it's going to be an interesting night. So a night recording, we almost never night record.
It's because they go off the rails, things go catastrophic, people unsubscribe and rage quit.
Please don't rage quit our podcast. Well, it was Martin Luther King Jr. Day this week, and the kids were off school, and so our normal Monday recording time didn't really work. So this is going to be a hoot because it's late at night and we're tired.
Right. The kids are in bed, but not asleep. And we're just a little loopy, not super loopy, but loopy enough that it's going to be a good evening.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling very experimental tonight because, I mean, this is going to blow your mind. Are you ready?
Yes.
I put chocolate soy milk in my mint tea.
Whoa.
I know, right?
Mind blown.
I was sort of hoping it would taste like
chocolate mint.
Chocolate mint candies.
Yeah, the things. That was not what I thought you were going to say, but okay, that's great.
What were you hoping I would say?
I just that we were going to experiment with a new podcast format.
Okay, podcast. Let's talk about podcasts.
This is going to be good.
Indeed. Speaking of marital bliss,
transition.
We are. That was an awesome transition. We are putting together the framework for a course that will be about founder families and how to be awesome at your business and still keep your loved ones, how to stay connected to the people that you care about.
Right. And it's not just a framework. It's going to be an actual course to help people really. Is it loved ones or is it significant others?
It's significant others.
Yeah. So this one's not about kids, but if you have a boyfriend, girlfriend, a spouse, a significant other, a partner of any kind, it's how to run your business and also stay connected with that person, right? It's framework blueprint. It's a course to help you do that better.
And my intention in mentioning it at this point is that we are still building the framework. We're still building the blueprint of what will be included in the course. So if you have questions or things that you would love for us to talk about, or like your own stories of how your business life really had a negative impact, perhaps on your relationship with your significant other, like this is a great time to email us or tweet at us. We would love to make a course that's actually super helpful to you. So we'd love to know more about how we can make it helpful to you.
Good email address for that is sherry@zenfounder.com.
And is Sherry like the wine? Sherry.
There you go.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase. Work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
What are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to talk about how to have hard conversations.
Yes.
Which seems like a really great thing to talk about when we're both tired.
Yeah.
Since one of the things that is really important about having hard conversations is not to have them when you're tired, but
don't be stressed, tired, sleepy, exhausted. There's a bunch of things that I was
synonyms for the same thing.
Okay. Stress was one, and then the other three were the same thing. You're right. Yeah.
Hungry, in pain,
sick,
thirsty.
Right. Never hard conversations.
Grumpy.
This is it's a big deal because there are hard conversations with your significant other, hard conversations with your parents, your siblings, your family. There are hard conversations with co-founders, and employees. Like it's the gamut, right? It's a 360 thing. It's, you will never get away from this. You know, even if you're the founder of your own company, like you will have to have conversations that are hard for people around you.
And I think it's a great skill to be able to do that well. Again, in any domain of your life, when you are someone who is able to be authentic and open and clear-headed in the context of a topic that's kind of emotionally loaded, either for you or for someone else, or for both of you, which is the hardest conversation, it's a great skill to cultivate. And I think many of us have a lot of dread about hard conversations, whether those are conversations about money with your co-founder or with your spouse or a difficult situation with one of your children. It is imperative that you are thoughtful and as clear-headed as you can be and don't go sort of stomping into hard conversations with a lot of emotion and not a lot of reflection.
Yeah, it's easy to do that and to kind of wing it or to kind of like halfway prepare for it and think, well, I'm going to say this and that. And then as soon as you get in, the first sentence derails you and then you're going from like lizard brain. Because as soon as you revert to the your instinct or, you know, I use lizard brain loosely, but it really is it's when you get scared or you fight or flight or whatever, like that's when things go sideways in a big way. You never want to get there. You want to have prepared for all the eventualities.
So we want to break down our conversation about hard conversations into three components. One is the preparing aspect of how to get yourself ready for hard conversations. The second section is some tips to be mindful of during the hard conversation or how to, you know, engage the topic in a way that will optimize the likelihood of success. And then, you know, how to end those kind of conversations well. So yeah, I think when you are getting ready to have a tough conversation, it is really essential to be really clear about what your desired outcome is. And that could fall under a variety of categories. So you're either trying to communicate information, you know, to clarify something, to teach someone on your team how to do something that maybe they have not done correctly before. Perhaps you're trying to solve a problem. We have had a number of conversations with our kids about topics that they fight about really often, and it's like this recurring drama. And so we want to solve that problem or break that pattern and go about that in a different way. Perhaps you're wanting to communicate your feelings or your perspective. I think we have a lot of these conversations in the context of our intimate relationships where something hurt you or you're bothered by something and you want to have a conversation where you can communicate that to your partner in a way that they understand or a way that brings you to a new level of connection despite something making your relationship strained. And sometimes I think we have hard conversations because we want to understand someone else's feelings or their decisions. We don't understand why they made the choice that they did. And we want to really go to them and try to figure out so we can understand better their perspective and not be so angry or so hurt about what we perceive as the driving motivations for their actions. Whatever desire you have in going into the conversation, I think it's helpful to really sit down and think through, like, what's a win here? What am I hoping for? And this is skipping ahead a little bit, but even to state that in the conversation, to say, hey, what I'm hoping for in this conversation is to just understand better why you made that decision. Or what I'm hoping for in this conversation is to communicate my frustration to you in a way that's helpful, in a way that you can understand me better.
Yeah. And I mean, good examples of these kinds of conversations are certainly conversations with your significant other. They're conversations with, you know, an employee, colleague who is not living up to the standards that, you know, you want as a company. And those are always hard conversations. Or it's breaking some news to someone. You know, let's say, I need to break news to you that so-and-so is leaving the company or that so-and-so is transitioning in a role or that you need to transition in a role. Like there's a bunch of different things that you might have to communicate to someone. And it's always, there's a lot of ways for it to be difficult. But I think a big piece that I've taken away as I've got, especially as I've gotten older, because I didn't used to think this was a big deal. I used to think that people could have hard conversations and they were just good at it. And I don't know that anyone is naturally good at it. I think people practice and I think they prepare. And I think certain people get really good at it at a young age because they probably practice and prepare, perhaps with their parents and siblings. I didn't used to have hard conversations when I was younger. But then you get into college, you get into your work life, and you find that you do actually have to prepare your mind for this. And so maybe it's in your 20s or your, you know, for me, late bloomer, like early 30s, where I finally realized I'm going to have a lot of these conversations. I used to avoid them and try to figure out how can I structure my entire work life that I never have to have a hard conversation. And that's not actually the answer. Because all of us are going to have these conversations at some point. I think the answer is to prepare, and even as weird as it sounds, like practice for them. And it's to think through what the other person, especially if you're coming in with the information, think through all the iterations of what someone might be thinking on the other end, and start to, it's not to counter or one up or anything, but it's to go down all the avenues so that there's no surprises as you bring up this, you know, whatever hard topic it may be.
I think done really well, this is a practice of empathy, right? This is a practice of you getting in someone else's head and understanding, or at least trying to predict what they're going to say and how they're going to respond, but also how they're going to feel. And I think if you can enter a hard conversation from a place of empathy, a feeling with someone, then that like can do a lot to diffuse a potentially explosive or highly emotional conversation when you've done the work to think about how this sounds to the person you're talking to and you can communicate that to them. That just, I think, makes hard conversations so much easier because you're sort of like both on the same team in that you are feeling together. You're feeling what they're feeling to some extent.
Right. It's to really think about it from their perspective and try to get ahead of questions, comments, even like kind of brainstorming and thinking about tangents or anything that someone could potentially go down. Because what I've found in these conversations, which I've had many for different reasons, right? It might be you and I having a conversation, or it might be an employee or someone I work for, or just client, whatever it is that I'm pretty good as long as we stay kind of in the box that I imagine. It's like, oh, we're going to talk about this thing. But as soon as a tangent comes or we go off the rails, like I don't improv very well. And I feel like a lot of left brain, like developer folks, it's not our strong suit. And then as soon as we go off the rails, I'm kind of like off in lizard brain land where suddenly I'm flailing and I'm, you know, the hair stands up on the back of my neck and I'm like, I get hot. And it's like, I don't know how to handle this very well. And so the more eventualities or conversations or topics or tangents I can think of and at least have some context of how I would respond or how we can talk through that, really the better things wind up for both of us. You know, this is not just a protective measure of me, but it's a protective measure of like the relationship. And if I can get out ahead and think, yeah, I have some news and it's going to potentially, whether it's disrupt or upset or even just potentially shock someone, not just go into a conversation and lay it out factual and just kind of dump information on somebody, but actually think, what would I feel if this happened? And how can I help reassure this person as they're thinking through? Because that's the thing. If you have a hard conversation with someone, you know, often there's a lot of processing involved. And you may have already processed this over the course of months or weeks. I think about, let's say you're selling a company and it's been 2 months. You've been thinking about selling a company. Well, if you come to, you know, an employee and you say, hey, we're selling the company, they haven't had the 2 months. And you need to give them some time, even if it's only an hour, to just sit with that and think about it and process it and let their lizard brain run free and answer their questions as you go through it.
I think when you enter this kind of conversation, it's really helpful to, like I said, name what you're hoping for, but also say out loud your feelings about the conversation. Like something like, this is a really important conversation and I want it to go well, but I'm also aware that it is kind of an emotional conversation. It might be a hard one to have. I think opening a difficult conversation with some version of that can, again, do a lot to neutralize whatever suspicion or defensiveness might exist at the outset of a conversation. I know the times that I say to you, hey, I'm kind of nervous to talk to you about this, or I want to talk to you about something and it's kind of emotionally loaded for me. Those statements go a long way to help the person you're talking to also have an empathetic experience, also begin to feel some of what you're feeling, so that there's this kind of shared emotional land between the two of you.
I agree. And I think it comes down to evaluating what the, you know, the power dynamic is. If it's a significant other, then you're on equal footing in essence. If it's an employee you're talking to, I think there's a big part of thinking about what questions will they not ask that you should just answer. You should get out ahead of, right? If it's someone on a power dynamic, you know, one layer below you, where you're like, you're probably thinking this. So an example is when, you know, one of the hard conversations I've had in the past 2 years is when we were moving towards the acquisition of Drip. And I realized that for whatever reason, whenever people hear that a company is going to be acquired, they think everything bad is going to happen. And what I've realized is that's not actually the truth. Like, good things can happen out of acquisitions. But when I brought it to each employee individually, I said, I'm going to give you, like, this is how I started the conversation. I'm going to give you some news that's going to sound bad at first, but I need you to trust me because I think it's going to work out better for all of us. And that shaped the conversation, right? It was a very honest, like, think about how authentic that statement is and how if a politician were telling you something, they would not say that. Or how if a boss, you know, we can all think of a boss that we didn't like who deceived us, they would not have said that. But that's what I said. It was because it was the truth. You know, it's like this news, and the sentence that followed that was, I think in the next, you know, 4 weeks, Drip will be acquired by LeadPages. And then that was this big thing, but then I could come back and I said, but remember, like, you need to trust me. Let's talk this out. And it was kind of just this very authentic statement of shaping and of kind of removing the elephant in the room, right? The elephant in the room is, oh my gosh, this is terrible. But I already said, it's going to sound like bad news, but please hear me out because I think it's going to work out best for all of us.
One of the things that helps set you up for success when you're having a difficult conversation is to really make sure that you provide a context where you can have the conversation you need to have. And that means removing all distractions. There should be no pings and rattles and buzzes from electronic devices. There should be no people walking by and interrupting you. If you really want to have an important conversation, honor the importance of what's being expressed by making sure that you're in the right environment for that, a private environment, a quiet environment, an environment where you're not going to be interrupted.
And something to think about during the conversation is to use I statements. And this is straight out of psychology, but it's like be specific and direct about what you've observed and what you're feeling. Don't use grand sweeping statements, things like always, never, or get so focused on one example that you're lost in the nitty gritty of it. And these are tactics that people use on Reddit and Hacker News and forums, like anything you see where people want to do a sweeping generalization of, you always do this, you never think of my, like, as soon as you say that, you've lost people. And you see it in forums too. Like, I hate to equate the internet with these kind of conversations, but it's the drama. It reeks of drama, right? And it reeks of like this emotion that you instantly tune out if you're a thinking person. So be aware of your own internal, and I have become extremely aware of, you know, when you're growing up, this is kind of, you do this. I see it in our kids. I think it's a natural thing. I correct our kids now, and I was not corrected as a kid. So up until into my teens, I would use statements like this. in high school and such. And now I remember conversations where I would say things like always and never. And I think, it's just not true, you know? And I still see people doing it today in our community, in the founder community, whether it's on forums or other avenues. And every time I see it, I'm like, yep. All right. So when I was 18, I thought that too. And you need to kind of get a hold of yourself.
Well, you're invoking an absolute,
yep.
Right? You're going to the outer edges of the argument in a way that's almost never accurate.
That's right. That's right. And somehow it feels like you need to say that probably because someone at some point didn't listen to you. It was a parent, it was a significant other, it was a friend who didn't listen to you. And so you felt you had to escalate. And by saying always and never and raising your voice and like there's a bunch of things you can do to get people to hear you, but no one actually needs that if you're just having a kind of standard conversation about something. And when you enter into these things, it tends to be because there's some baggage prior to that of someone just not listening to you.
Although I do think that setting the conversation up well helps prevent your internal sense of need for this kind of escalation. Like if you can communicate, hey, this is really important to me. I would really like your full attention. And I'm going to talk about something that's kind of hard for me to talk about. I think that is for most reasonable people, like enough of a statement that gets attention that you hopefully then don't feel like you need to use this like hyperbolic data to say you always or you never. I think one of the challenging things in conversations too is that it's helpful to be concrete and give examples of what you're talking about, but it's easy then to get into this tangential conversation about the specifics of an example. So to sort of dissect the unique reasons why in that case you made that decision. And that is almost never helpful too. I mean, I feel like if you're going to someone because you feel like there's this consistent pattern of them not communicating with clients in a way that's respectful and sort of in keeping with your expectations for the company, you want to give them concrete examples, but you don't want to get into this nitty gritty, well, in this particular case, that guy did this and that, and that's why I did this. And that's not helpful. You are talking about a pattern that you've seen over time, and it's important to kind of like put the kibosh on the unpacking of the specific details.
Something else to think about is something I've become more and more aware of is catching someone off guard, surprising them with news tends to not be good. And I remember feeling this many times where someone would, it typically was a boss who would approach me and be like, I want to meet. And then we'd meet and then they would just drop something on me. And I'm trying to think of what it was, but the company's being acquired or we have a new client or we're shifting clients. And I remember being like, no, I actually like me as a little bit introverted left brain thinker, like I need an hour or two to think about this and process it outside of this conversation. I remember is what I used to think. And so at this point, when I think about delivering, you know, not all hard conversations are just about delivering shocking news, right? Some of them are about trying to feel stuff out or talk about it. But when I know that I have something that I have to tell people, I try to give them as much of a heads up about it as possible. It's not always possible to give everyone a heads up about everything as you schedule the meeting notice and put it on their calendar. But if you can let someone know that, hey, we are going to talk about this topic, like it helps prepare them mentally so that they're not kind of on guard as you enter or bring up that topic of conversation.
It's really a lot about, of course, knowing your audience and knowing how to help them have sort of the best engagement possible, how much notice you give them and how you do that. But it's part of that preparation of thinking through, like, how can I maximize the likelihood that this person is going to be able to be really engaged and present in this conversation?
Yeah. And what's interesting is when things go wrong, we often assume that the content of our message is the problem. So sometimes, depending on how you feel, you either, you know, get more aggressive or you begin to water it down or you like avoid the content altogether. But the key is to make, frankly, that's the whole message of this hard conversation thing is to make the other person feel safe. And there's a couple ways that you can do this. The first one is the person needs to know that you care about their best interests and their goals. And the other one is they need to know that you care about them. And when people believe both of these, they can relax and absorb what you're saying. And there's ways to do this. Like most of the conversations you're going to have that are difficult, you have some type of relationship with them. If it's a significant other, then you have years, months, years, or decades, depending on, you know, how long you've been hanging around. If it's a colleague, someone you work with, you work for, or works for you, you need to build relationships. Like that's a big part of managing someone or working with someone, is that you do hang out at lunch or you have working conversations of doing things, and that you've been authentic. Like it's funny, all the hard conversations I've had have been easier when I'm having them with people that I've been in the trenches with for 6 months or more. And it doesn't even matter. Like there are people that I have in 6 months working with them, I've never had lunch with them once, but we've been in meetings every week and they see how I operate and they see that I'm authentic and they see that I say what I mean and I mean what I say. And they see that I don't sugarcoat things, and that when I call it like it is that way. And then when I go to have a hard conversation with them, I've literally had people come out after and tell me, I trust what you're saying because you always say what you mean.
And I think that's such an advantage if you can obviously develop that kind of rapport and reputation with people over time. And it's, I think the vast majority of our conversations, both professionally and obviously personally, are going to be from that framework. They're going to be with people that we have an established relationship with. There are two super hard conversations that stand out in my mind from my life as a psychologist. And one was, this was actually before I was a psychologist, but it was, I worked at an anonymous test site where my job was to talk with people about their HIV risk, administer an HIV test, and then give them the results. And so I think I was 21 or 22 at this point, had the job of telling people, you know, some of the worst news they're going to get in their life. Like, you have had a positive HIV test. And I didn't know, you know, I don't know these people. I don't even know their names. I don't know anything about them. It's a totally private, anonymous, and it's a one-time conversation. I'm never going to see them again. And the ability to be in that moment and to be present with someone delivering terrible news and having no context, no relationship with them, but yet be trustworthy and help provide resources and help comfort them. Like what I said in that moment, I don't know if this is overstating it, but I believe sort of had the power to shape, to some extent, begin to shape how they felt about this thing that was happening to them. And one of the superpowers that I began to cultivate at that point in my career, again, before I went to graduate school, was to be able to listen to whatever someone needed to vent or say. And I think that is particularly hard in really difficult conversations, because in all of our preparation, I mean, in everything that we have said so far in our podcast today, is really been about what we say. It's about communicating the message, how it's communicated, how we prepare for it. But I think sometimes when we go into hard conversations, we're so focused on how to say what we're trying to communicate that it's easy to like bypass the listening part, to really like put our agenda on hold for a second and really hear what the other person is saying and what they're feeling. And I think the second thing that can make listening hard in the context of a conversation like this is the downside of what we talked about earlier. If you've spent a lot of time and energy trying to anticipate the other person's response, you might have some scripts in your head that get cued by something they say, but aren't really the full embodiment of what they're trying to say. Like you're listening for, oh, okay, we're taking this route in the choose your own adventure version of this conversation, but you're not actually listening to what they're saying and what they mean. So I think that the most satisfying kinds of conversations, even if they're extremely painful conversations, like the, you know, the kind of extreme experiences that I'm talking about, when people feel heard, when they feel listened to, that their fears and concerns have been aired and that you have taken them in. That is kind of the difference between someone walking away feeling like, man, that guy was a jerk. He just, you know, told me that I wasn't doing well in my job, versus I feel like my struggles were listened to and I have a very like specific individualized game plan for how to make this better. So listening is the key. And listening is also what, if you don't have the leisure of months of working with someone to build up social capital and to build up a reputation of being a straight shooter and being an honest person, listening is this other way of building rapport that you can do in less time when you are really communicating that you are tracking with them and that you are focused and you hear what they're saying and, you know, are giving them truly your full attention.
Yep. And that's something I'm not very good at. I'm totally going to admit it. Like my superpower is like over longer periods of time, which may only be months, but it's like, it's doing exactly what I talked about. It's like being authentic, delivering, shipping, and building rapport and loyalty between me and someone else. And I feel like the reason I call that out is I feel like there are folks who are listening to this who probably are in the same boat, who that is a superpower or at least something that they do well. And then there are other folks, you are more naturally inclined to be able to build a rapport, you know, both directions based on minutes of interaction. And I think that's like really applicable and probably a more broader applicable skill set.
Well, I think you need both, right? I mean, you need both. You need to be able to cultivate the sense of being trustworthy by being known as someone who is honest and straightforward. But then you also, for many of us, we sometimes get dropped into situations where we don't have leisure of that. And that's when I think talking less and listening more becomes a really important skill. And I think a classic example of that is with a really angry client. Maybe your team is struggling to work with this really angry client, and for whatever reason, you get roped in to deal with this. And they don't know you. You don't know them. You just know that they're super unhappy with whatever service or product you provide. And the quickest way to neutralize that is to really listen to them and communicate that you are listening. And that, you know, obviously that sort of dealing with conflictual clients is a whole other conversation, but it's a difficult conversation and many of us are afraid of it. And the burden is not that we have exactly the right things to say, and we certainly don't have the leisure of months of building up trust in most cases. But if we can listen well and communicate that we're listening, then it's a great way to neutralize upset people.
What I found is after having hard conversations, there is an art to kind of ending them or closing them down. One way is to say thank you, but not in those words. It's often things like, well, I really appreciate your input, or I really appreciate you taking the time today to chat with us, or I really appreciate your contribution. You know, it's like there's ways to say thank you that don't sound patronizing, but that are genuine and that come from, you know, again, whether it's someone working for you, if you're working for them, like there's this ending that kind of caps something that makes everyone feel okay about getting a difficult topic out. And I think the three-word summary is say thank you, but it's not in that literal sense. It's figuring out a phrase, like a tactful phrase. And this is actually, I mean, I'm going to be honest, when I'm heading into a hard conversation, I will often think ahead of time, what is almost the exact phrase that I'm going to think about as we're wrapping up, you know, that I can say to, because I'm assuming there's going to be a good out, you know, ending from this. What is the phrase that I can use to make the other person feel appreciated and not in a disingenuous way, but to genuinely, I'm guessing that I'm going to feel good at the end of this. What can I say that I'm not going to stumble around, you know, that I can say to kind of indicate that things are closing up?
I think another great way to really end a conversation well is to be good at recap, like be good at reviewing what was said, what were the important points. This is again communicating that you heard their concerns, their fears, you know, what they are saying. And then also in, you know, a couple bullet points, recapping what's most important to you. And I think if you can do that kind of summary statement well, that should then lead into specific next steps. And maybe nothing got solved in the conversation. Maybe it was pretty painful and it was kind of a train wreck and it didn't feel good. So the follow-up is that we're going to calm down and then we're going to have another conversation. We're going to talk again tomorrow. We're going to talk again next week. We're going to talk again after we've had a good night's sleep. That's an okay follow-up. Not everything gets solved in one conversation. So, but I think the intention that's stated out loud to continue the conversation or to implement whatever decisions were made in the conversation is an important way to have a kind of a nice, clear ending and to reiterate the importance of the content and the importance of people's feelings about it.
And if this topic of having hard conversations is something that you feel like you want to dive deeper into, whether you have a lot of them, you struggle with them, there is a book. It's called Crucial Conversations, and I highly recommend it. I've listened to it on audiobook. I've used it to prepare for multiple conversations of this type, and it dives really deep, at 12, 13 chapters deep, certainly far further than we could do. You know, this is consider our podcast kind of a summary of the ideas that you could do in Crucial Conversations. But that is the book title, and I would encourage you to go check it out on Audible, Kindle, or wherever paperbacks are sold.
And that's the Night Podcast Shifts, signing off by Captain Macho and Zen Founder.
Oh man, yeah, it's going to be good.
And if you loved this episode or any of our other episodes, hey, don't hesitate to write a review on iTunes.
Or even just click 5 stars. You don't have to write a review. That's the whole thing, right? You click just the 5 star and then you're done.
Oh, it's so easy. Just the stars.
Yeah, just the stars.
But not 4 stars.
No, because what if you're going to do 4 stars, go ahead and email us questions@zenfounder.com and be like, I was going to rate you 4 stars. But if you're going to do 5 stars, go ahead and do that, right?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to bed now.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.